Recorded live from the mats of Radical MMA in New York City, the Martial Culture Podcast, your source for in-depth combat sports and martial arts insights with Coach Rene Dreyfus and Matt Pierce. Ring the bell and let's get it on.
Can you sing again?
No, I will not sing on mic. I will not.
I was recording that.
So I have to, please. So I have to tell you a funny story about me singing. So you know Japanese, I think I've said this before on the podcast, for listeners might know this.
I don't know Japanese.
Japanese people yeah. really like karaoke, or as it's actually said, karaoke, right?
Yeah.
So they really like, have you ever done karaoke? Mm-hmm. You have?
Yeah.
You seem pretty good at it, right?
No.
Okay, so you, I guarantee, are, you know, Adele compared to me. I am the worst singer on the planet. So Japanese always have an excuse, or at least the Japanese. I can't say every Japanese, that's racist. But, you know, like, it's a very strong cultural thing. Mm-hmm. And every Japanese person group that I was friends with, they're like, hell, let's go to karaoke. You know, let's go this, that's that. It's just like a social thing that they like to do. And it's interesting. It happens is you go to these, like, private, they call it karaoke boksu, right? So box, right? Which is like... you go to a room kind of like this podcast studio. They close the door and it's you and your four friends and you sing and you can order some food, some chicken wings or whatever food you want, right? And then you have a good time privately. It's like a little private party and sometimes they drink and whatever, mm-hmm. right? So it's like a fun time in Japan and everybody sings. And so I've been invited to karaoke a number of times, but I have never once been invited back. And you know, you see the conversation. This, I used to work at a Japanese company. You see the conversation is like, hey, let's go to karaoke. And then they see me like, no, let's not. They're like, I have never met anyone more off tune in my life.
Wow.
My wife complains when I sing along to songs. She's like, I will divorce you if you keep singing.
Wow.
That's how bad I am.
Wow.
So
now we have to go.
This also happened when I was young. So my sister had to play piano, or not had to, but you know, like my sister was playing piano when we were kids, because I think my parents wanted to involve music in our lives. Mm-hmm. And then I had one music lesson and the teacher's like, you know, keep him in martial arts.
Yeah, that was it.
The lesson lasted about 10 minutes and like, keep him in martial arts.
Well, it's good to know your strengths.
And absolute weaknesses. No, it's a strength. My weapon is to torture people with my singing. It's another form of submission.
A reverse bard.
Yes, exactly. A reverse bard.
You make the party weak.
Yes.
That's funny.
Ray of enfeeblement.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shout out to all our Dungeons and Dragons players there.
Magic Missile.
Magic Missile. Yes. Oh, you have obviously played Dungeons and Dragons. Are you looking forward to the movie coming out?
No.
Oh, it's coming out this week.
Yeah, they never made a good one.
No, this one's supposed to be really good.
Well, it's got the
Chris Pine in it.
Chris
Pine. And it's got the Reggae, the guy from Reggie Jackson. I don't know his name. The guy from Bridgerton. The handsome dude from Bridgerton.
Oh, Reggae St. John.
Yes, Reggae St. John. Yeah, that guy.
I didn't watch that show and masturbate to it like every other person in the world.
That guy is a handsome dude, man. And he's very charismatic and very funny. Like, actually, he seems like an extraordinarily nice guy. Yeah. Very, very funny. Yeah. And this movie, as I've been told, the tone is very much like Guardians of the Galaxy, where it's like, you know, lighthearted humor, doesn't take itself too seriously, a fun romp. And I'm looking forward to it.
Have you seen Knights of Badassery?
No. What's that?
I think that I'm singing it wrong, but it's Knights of Something Badass. It's basically it's a group of guys that go LARPing, and they find like in the woods this book, and it summons a demon.
Oh, for real.
And they have to fight it, but they think it's part of the LARPing, and then they eventually figure it out. But it's like, it's really funny. It's got Peter Dinklage is in it.
Peter Dinklage is in it.
And a couple other people that have since gotten. It's like an independent movie, but it's since got more of a. Like, all the actors in it are now, like,
big actors. Oh, but it happened before Game of Thrones or after Game of Thrones?
Might have been, like, either at the same time or, like, a little before.
Okay, yeah, because Peter Dinklage is, like, super famous now.
Yeah, it was before he became famous, for sure.
It's funny, but most martial art people, the mass majority of martial art people, particularly the people in the traditional world, are closet LARPers, meaning they really want to pretend to be a Chinese Buddhist monk, sure. You know, a Shaolin monk. They really want to be, yeah, exactly. They really want this, but they don't actually want to fight, but they want to, like, I think we have these drives to, like Dungeons & Dragons, like you have this drive to go out and create an alternate identity. And, you know, we as human beings are facets of a crystal. Like we're not one thing. We're like different parts of our personality are different facets of that crystal, and they come out in different points. There's a professional Matt, and then there's the husband Matt, and then there's maybe soon to be the dad Matt. And these are all parts of your personality. Like when I'm in the academy, I'm a very different person when I'm outside of it. I just am. It's a different part of my personality. And when I'm hanging out with my childhood friends, I'm a different person. When I'm with my mom, I'm different. You know, we're not this block of one thing, right? Particularly depending on, we talked about last time, outside influences can change us too, right? Sure. But I think also we have an innate desire to create different facets and different experiment with our sense of self identities, particularly as when we're younger, you know, and exploring who we are. We make changes and adjustments of who we are through pretend. And, you know, all psychiatrists have said pretend is a very important tool for children. Yeah. It's a very, very important developmental tool. So like D&D, Dungeons & Dragons, is extraordinarily popular in sort of at-risk communities or marginalized communities, or among people who are in a certain space but can't actually express what they want to, but they feel it. One of them is interesting. You know where D&D is extraordinarily popular is prison.
Yeah.
Because they use their imagination to free themselves and also act heroically and, you know, get into this. And then also among the LGBTQ population, the Dungeons & Dragons is a great tool. There's actually a lot of places is where young children first start experimenting with this different sense of themselves in the play of Dungeons & Dragons. It's actually very, very therapeutic for them, according to a lot of current literature.
Mm-hmm.
So pretend is a very important thing, and I think it's a part of the human experience. Mm-hmm. And I'm all for it, you know, using your creativity or imagination. I think that's what writing is. Writing is pretend, but just on paper, yeah. You know?
That's what the devil would say, though.
The devil, right.
D&D is from the devil. Are you in league with the devil?
Yeah, I know. I remember that. I remember that whole thing from the 80s mm-hmm. when Dungeons & Dragons, you know, people were burning it. But that's the thing is, like, religious groups or any group of authoritarian control wants to stifle individuality. When they stifle individuality, means you will be this thing that I tell you are, and you will only do that thing, and you are not allowed to experiment with different senses of self, different mm-hmm. expressions, different ways of looking at the world, and certainly not different types of sexuality or something like sure. that. You know, that is the big no-no. You know, and it's also a big part of the that restrictive social blanket that wrapped around a lot of previous generations. It was like, you can't express yourself this way because you're a man. You know, and that doesn't even LGBTQ. You're a guy, you can't cry. You're a guy, you can't do that. No, this is all bullshit, you know? You know, so the funny thing is, you know, I have some students who play Dungeons & Dragons in my academy, and I've been just following the world. I played it as a kid, you know? And there's some interesting generational divide between the people who played Dungeons & Dragons who are now my age, or maybe a little bit younger, and the young people today. And so what people of certain age do is they go out and become a hero, and they just play Lord of the Rings, right? You know, mm-hmm. they like slash and hack and, you know, kill monsters and kill dragons like that, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a very sizable component of Dungeons & Dragons people that are like, why do I want to kill something? I just want to explore the world. And then like, okay, so there was one time where some young person is like, yeah, you know, I don't want to go on an adventure. I just want to go to the bazaar and shop. And then the other people are like, we're going to spend the whole time pretending to shop, you know, but I think, and then, so it's like a little generational divide that Dungeons & Dragons was deeply, I think, involved in the hero's journey as it relates to, heroic fantasy concepts of good and evil and triumph and, you know, Luke Skywalker kind of thing, King Arthur, you go, you slay the damn dragon, come back. But as I said, because Dungeons & Dragons has been this pretend way, this world of pretend for people to experiment who they are, right? They're like, killing something is not my fun pretend. My fun pretend is going shopping and buying a dress, and I'm a guy, but I drive a dress in this Dungeons & Dragons world because I'm playing a female character or something like that, right? You know, like, yeah. It's like a very interesting...
interesting.
Yeah, there's no dungeon and there's no dragon. There's just pretend world. And you know what? You know what? More power to
you. Do what you want to do.
Yeah, do what you want to do, right? Right. Just, I guess, pick your gaming group appropriately. Yeah. But going back to martial arts, like, so many martial art people are just adult LARPers. But they don't want to admit it. And I just saw this seminar on of these guys training knife fighting, right? And I respect knife fighting. I respect it. I think any martial art I respect. But as I understand, that seminar was very much like, this is the real world and this is real tough and this is what you do and da da da, right? Okay. Mm. I want you to picture who's at this knife fighting seminar. Just guess.
Bros.
Muscle bros. No.
No.
No, right. That's what you would kind of think. Yeah. Right? No. Okay. This is the thing about martial arts. You're fooling yourself if you don't do the hard work. What's the first hard work thing you think you do to be an effective martial artist?
Show up.
That's true.
What? Body shop? Get in shape, man.
Yes, you gotta get in shape, right. You are not going to be an effective martial art if you're obese.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I'm not saying you can't start. Like anybody should start. But one of the things you have to do is you have to start trying to get in shape, you know? Like, now, if you're an instructor of martial arts, that means that there was this great famous judo instructor. He'd already retired, and he's a famous judo instructor from Cuba, and he is extraordinarily obese. But he doesn't train. I mean, he's just teaching, right? You know, I don't agree with that. I don't think you should be obese because martial arts should be a life journey. But that being said, he's like, dude, I'm just a coach, man. You know, like, so he's this guy who just sits in the chair and tells people what to do. But he's actually created like 6-7, you know, world champions and Olympic medals. So he's obviously doing something right, aside from eating like, you know, Cubano sandwiches, you know, he's a very effective coach, but obviously the guy can't even get up out of the chair. So he can't fight. He cannot. So at this place, I was looking at the video, watching the training, and they were mostly middle-aged guys, almost all completely out of shape. I mean, like massive guts and no conditioning, no muscle tone. And one of the things I think that the art that attracts the LARPer element of the most are like the weapon arts. It's either the kung fu arts, like or the weapon arts. Sure. The kung fu art guys are, I think, a little bit more honest in that they're generally like, most people do kung fu, I think, today because it's like fun. I don't think they're like thinking self-defense. I don't know. I could be wrong. But most kung fu people I've met today, they're like, this is a culture activity and I have fun and, you know, I like jumping around and pretending to be a tiger. Okay, good for you. Right? Now, if you start talking about self-defense, and then you're full of shit. But if you just do it for fun, yeah, you know, no judgment, man. Do you. But the people in the combatives world who particularly are drawn to the weapons combatives are almost always middle-aged, very insecure white males who are very, very out of shape. But they're like, yo, bro, I'm gonna fucking defend myself. Yeah, I'm real fighting. And they all wear camel pants. They wear those camel pants, man. Oh my God, gotta have those camel pants. And then, you know, the camel, oh, you know what they do? They have the half knuckle gloves.
Oh.
Yeah. And of course.
With their bikers.
They gotta be camel. No. They gotta be desert camel. Like, that's what you gotta do. And you have the tactical gear, everything
bandanas.
You do. So if you go to Amazon and you type in tactical, the amount of shit that comes up that no actual tactical individual would ever use.
Wow.
The amount of shit that comes up, and it just sold because like you gotta have everything that says tactical.
It's
like tactical windbreaker, tactical watch, tactical, you know, I don't know.
I saw an ad for a tactical stroller.
A what?
Tactical stroller.
You gotta be kidding me.
It's a stroller for men.
For men to put their babies.
But it
turns into like the Batmobile, right?
It just has big wheels. That's it, and it's camouflage.
You're shitting me, no. Right? Oh my god, a tactical stroller. Let's just say right off that there is absolutely nothing that can be ever tactical about a stroller.
I don't know if you're in a war zone with a baby.
Yeah, you're in a war zone with a baby, or even you know, like if you're in a like let's say God forbid, and this is very serious, but you're in an active shooter scenario. I mean, unless that stroller's bulletproof, you're grabbing that baby and you're diving in for cover. Like, there's no tactile element of that stroller. I mean, I'm assuming the stroller is not bulletproof, right? No. It's not like Baby Yoda's, like, thing that covers.
Yeah, it's not a $2,000 stroller. It's like $50 on Amazon.
Jesus fucking Christ, man. It's ridiculous, right? But you saw it. It's fucking ridiculous. Yeah. Everything is tactical. And these guys are the market that they look for to sell all this fucking bullshit. Mm-hmm. And they are so absolutely full of horseshit. Mm. And I guaranteed they all suck at knife fighting because they're not good athletes. Yeah. Like, that's the other thing about that I hate about Kung Fu is that it's like in a lot of American Kung Fu, I can't speak to the Asian Kung Fu because actually when I went to see Asian martial arts schools in China that were Kung Fu, there was a lot of conditioning going on. And most of the guys I met actually were pretty good athletes, right? I mean, pretty conditioned, right? I wouldn't say good athletes, but conditioned. Like, that was, conditioning was a big part of the deal. I'm talking about Kung Fu as it's practiced by young, white, generally white males with ponytails, because it's required. When you do Kung Fu, you have to have grow your hair long and have a ponytail. It's required. Aikido and Kung Fu, it's part of the rules.
We just lost 10% of our audience.
You must have a ponytail, right? Like Taekwondo, you have to gel your hair. And the 80s, you also had to have the little wing cut, right? The little cut. Yeah, you had to gel your hair or spray pursue your hair. And Taekwondo, there was that. And then Aikido and Kung Fu, you had to have a ponytail. That's, of course, a
uniforms,
right?
Sure.
Yeah, uniforms, right? Right. But these guys are the Kung Fu schools in America. They are completely not training at their athletics. They're not doing pull-ups and push-ups and conditioning and doing the road work. You know what? I tell my fighters, if you're not doing some road work, don't even fucking think about fighting. You got to do the Rocky. You got to be Rocky. You got to go on the road and jog. And yeah, you know, like every morning, 5:30, hit the road. It doesn't have to be like 20 miles, but you got to do your road work. You got to do your strength conditioning, particularly body weight exercises, conditioning. Conditioning is a form of submitting your opponent. As Frank Shamrock says, my best submission is my conditioning, right? And that's true. Look, the karate world that I grew up in, man, a huge portion of that was like condition. You can get out of shape, you are not going to be able to fight. The adrenaline download, the adrenaline dump that's going to happen is going to put you in such an insane level of heart racing that you have to be prepared for that, for self-defense.
It's so
encounter.
Weird they're not thinking about that, because like all these tactical people are usually survivalists. And what are you going to need to survive?
Almost every fucking survivalist I've ever seen has a big fat beer belly.
All you have to do is be able to run faster than the guy next to you.
They're surviving on Doritos and Budweiser. Yeah. That's what they're surviving on. You know, it's LARPing, because it's fucking a LARPing identity, right? So, hey, I know we were actually gonna watch the fight, but why don't we just continue this discussion of, like, you know, kind of like the bullshit that surrounds martial arts. Okay. So this is the one, is that like you know, they want to LARP a samurai, they want to LARP a Shaolin monk, but the real one, the one that's the worst, is they want to LARP like a Navy SEAL or a sense of badassery.
Army Ranger.
Yeah, an Army Ranger, right? Something like that. Or a sense of badassery. Like so actually, do you ever watch the show Forged in Fire?
I think so.
Yeah, so it's this guy. They have people who make weapons, and, stuff, and then they compete to see how good the weapon is. Yeah. But the host is actually a rescue ranger. Like, he's I mean, this guy is amazing. Like, first of all, he is like rock solid in shape. And he actually, one of his things, that he's retired because he does the TV show, but he also does seminars on like rescuing people and stuff. Like, and they're good. Like, literally, Jimmy, with the stuff he's teaching is very technical, like how to carry a person out of a maybe burning building or out of an out of a freeway, the car is, how do you pick up a guy who's heavy? Say there's a car accident, you got to drag him out of the car, and there's cars coming or whatever, it's dangerous. How do you drag the guy out of a burning building or a car? You know, how do you take it when they're really heavy? People who are heavy and are dead weight are actually hard to manipulate if you've never grappled. So he's showing, you know, his techniques of how to save people. It's really good. But the group that he's teaching, you can see it on YouTube, the group that he's teaching, like, they're like the most uncoordinated fat schlubs you've ever seen, mm-hmm. who like, even if they learn his technique, they'll probably pull out their back because they're not taking care of their body. And this is also something that I had to, look, I have to confess here, you know, before the pandemic, my injuries really bothered me. And then over the pandemic, I had some surgery and, you know, I let my conditioning go. You know, I was also a little too focused on giving to my fighters and I didn't take time for myself. And this was something I had to think, and I started ballooning up in weight. And I, you know, like, dude, this is not the way. You know, as the Mandalorian says, this is the way. You know, like, this is not the way. Me as a martial artist means I have to be accountable to myself. And the first thing is, I don't have to be in six pack Magic Mike shape, but I need to be able to say that my body is an instrument that I take care of. And this is not even about martial arts. It's like, I want a life that I can, you know, like, I can do things that I want to do. So because of my knee injury, you know, I used to like walk like three blocks down the street and I'd be like, mom, my fucking knee, man, this really hurts. Like walking three blocks, it was just terrible. Mm-hmm. Right. So I was like, I had to do something about it. So I had these extra surgeries and right now I'm like building massive amounts of muscle around my knee and I still have to have one more surgery. But the idea is I'm going to take care of everything that I can possibly take care of and live a healthy lifestyle. And so that I can, you know, be there for my kids if we ever have them, but also I could just like do things that I want to do and enjoy my life, you know, and of course be functional in combat. You know, I'm not going to be the man and the top guy in the world, but I'm going to be the best that I can be at that moment, which the one thing I can control is how much time in the day I put into my physical conditioning. Right. And I do that now 4 days a week. I work out, 3 to 4. Physical conditioning. Wednesdays I'm here. And then the fifth day I go with the physical therapist and actually my conditioning guys are also like, they're kinesiology, masters in kinesiology and the physical therapy and things like that. And another day, so 5 days a week, I'm with some type of body training, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to do it like as much as that, but you know, taking care of yourself so you can have a good life is important. And if you're talking about being a martial artist, if you're serious in your competition mode, in martial art, and you want to just be functional for a self-defense encounter, if you don't have some level of conditioning, you are full of shit. Mm-hmm. You are LARPing. You are LARPing because, guys, do you ever heard of Andrew Wiltsy? I don't think you ever heard of him, right? Mm-hmm. He's a very famous Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner. Now, he's a sports practitioner, but he funded his sports journey by being a bouncer in a very, very bad part of town in the city he grew up in. And he said, like, on this podcast, or actually it was like, it wasn't even a podcast. It was like, he was on YouTube, he has a YouTube channel, right? Yeah. And I recommend people checking out. I'm going to tell you the name of it right now. Give me one second here. So he talks about like what a real fight like feels like and what it's looked like. You know, he's like, you don't know what an actual fight is like until you've actually, you know, like really been in it. And he talks about how he had to restrain a like football player that was, you know, like 220 and hell bent on like hurting him. And he's like trying to choke him out, but the football player's like bashing him up against the wall and it's just him. And he's outweighed by like 80 pounds and the football player is just like smashing into him and he's trying to choke him, but the player's doesn't even have a neck, can't get his head around, and the guy's like trying to hold his arm and bite him, and he's like literally panicking, like, hey, this guy is hell-bent because he's so inebriated and on other things, he's hell-bent on hurting me, he is hurting me, and as the bouncer I'm like required not to hurt him. So, but this guy's actually, if I let him do what he wants to do, I might die here. Like, I might die. He went through his head. He's like, I'm facing one of the most serious incidents of my life. And if I don't die, I could also have an injury right now that'll last me the rest of my life. And he's like sitting there trying to choke the guy out. And finally he gets to choke in, and he does. But it takes him way longer than he thinks he could, because he thought that the guy was on some sort of, you know, drugs or something.
Yeah.
So the guy had like superpowers. And I've had that experience myself. I experienced combat against in a cage against someone who I believe was but he was microdosing PCP. So I broke his arm. I absolutely broke that thing. I broke it. And he's looking at me like, whatever, dude, let's keep going. When that happens, you panic.
Yeah.
You're like, fuck. I just broke your arm. And you're like, whatever, dude.
Oh, my God.
Because, PCP gives you, like, a tremendous pain tolerance, right? Yeah. So I'm like, fuck. Like, man, if I didn't have conditioning in that moment, right? And it wasn't even that deep into the fight. It wasn't like I was, like, 10, 20 minutes in. It was pretty early in the fight. And, man, your body goes into overdrive. And if you can't surf that wave, you're going to die. And I was like, holy shit. Thank God I had done so much cardio for that fight, that it almost gave me courage, because I didn't feel exhausted. It gave me courage to have that gear, and I was able to take the guy and reverse the position, and then get in a position, and I started elbowing him in the face over and over again. And then he gave up his back, but before he gave up his back, he actually had a seizure. It was a combination of the broken arm, the drugs, and my elbow in his face. He wound up having a seizure. Jesus. And then they pulled me off, right? But that fight, after that, I couldn't get up out of a chair for like 25 minutes. I couldn't get up. I was like, I'm exhausted. Like, that's what real fighting is. And do you think if you're in a knife fight, you're going to get through that knife fight even with shitty cardio? No, no, no. If you're doing like Filipino Kali and you're just having a good time and you just want to enjoy the art of Kali or Eskrima, you know, those are the weapon arts, no problem. Again, do you. But if you're like, oh, we're tactical, and we're going to wear our camel pants, and we're going to do this and that, and we're going to really survive these encounters. And dude, the first thing is get rid of that fucking beer gut. You know, start running down the street. Like, you do, the only thing you're running after is a big McDonald's Big Mac. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, actually, not Big Mac. It's the Arby's in the Midwest.
Oh, Jesus.
Arby's, right? No, Arby's.
I've
right?
never eaten at Arby's.
I've never even actually.
They have
seen
good curly fries, though. I've had those.
Oh, I've never even seen an Arby's. It's a Midwest thing, right?
I think there's one. There's right around here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
well. Let's go to Arby's.
No, thank you.
I
don't do.
You like chicken parm?
I like chicken parm from this restaurant next to my house. It's run, like, the chef is like straight from Italy.
Yeah.
And I treat myself once in a while to it.
Well, next time you go, call me up, because I love chicken parm.
That's the best chicken parm I've ever had. And actually, I had chicken parm in Italy once, because I do enjoy it, right?
Yeah.
This guy next door to me, it is better than what I had in Italy.
Whoa.
And I had it in Italy. It was a really good restaurant. It was, up until that point, the one in Italy was the best.
Wow.
You know? And this one, they marinate the sauce for like 14 hours. It really becomes a sauce, right? But then, and then they import all the cheese from Italy. You know, that being said, it's funny. We're talking about conditioning and we just segregated a chicken parm. No. But you know, it's also important to live life with balance. Now, enjoy your life, but also live with balance. You know, like, I treat myself to something unhealthy because most of the week, the time of the week, I'm eating healthy. Like every my lunch right now is a grilled chicken chopped up and put in a pita with tomato, lettuce, eggplant, and a bunch of other veggies, pickles, things like that, and a tiny bit of like a Middle Eastern sauce, like tahini, tiny bit, and that's it. And that's my lunch, you know? And then the other one is cauliflower and a bunch of other vegetables. Same thing in a small, like a whole wheat pita, but it's like one packed with vegetables, one with vegetables and a little bit of grilled chicken. And then I have a protein shake, right? And it's like very, very filled, like vegetables. Like, I mean, like, it's like on that meal, I have like 12 different vegetables, mm-hmm. and a little bit of whole wheat and some protein, and then like have a protein shake with it. And that's my lunch every day. And it's healthy, vegetable, everything is like either grilled. It's not a lot of fat. And then there's nuts from the tahini, because tahini is made from sesame. I'm not like the biggest tahini fan, but I eat it because it's not bad for you. It's like mm-hmm. good healthy fats. And then like last night at dinner, I had lean organic chicken that I cooked in tomato sauce, and then that was it. And then I had corn and asparagus and all grilled, and a salad with, you know, like all sorts of spinach and stuff, right? Spinach salad with like veggies, right? Pretty healthy. So like if I eat like that, right, then on the weekend I can have one meal or like that's like cheat, which is like, yeah, chicken barm. but I have to be accountable to myself. And I'll be honest, like this is actually a confession. Like over the pandemic, do you know how much I ballooned up to my weight?
I have no idea.
I ballooned to like it started before the pandemic too. It started before that. But you know, even when you met me, I was already injured, and you know, I was a little heavier. Hmm. Right?
I mean, you look small to me, but...
You look small to me. I'm not looking down at me.
No.
I know I'm shorter than you.
I never thought of you as somebody that was out of shape.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But thank you. It was really hard for me to manage the business, manage my injuries, manage coaching, manage the life, and not find time for myself, which I didn't, which was incorrect, right? And then over the pandemic, I had surgery and I was, you know, down for a while, and I ballooned up in weight. And I also got a little depressed, you know, because my gym closed. It was a tough time mentally for me too. So, you know, I admit that, right? So my walk around weight at the highest was about 245, which is like way, yeah, it was really big, right? It was terrible. Now I'm down to 190. So, and I got about 10 more pounds to go where I'm happy about myself, right? 180, which is, you know, I walked around when I was a fighter. I walked around 175. I'm a little older now, so I got to give myself some shrimp. So, my target weight for me in another year will be 180. And that's it. You know, like, all right. So, I took some responsibility, took some accountability, and said, this is not the way. This is, I'm not a bullshit LARPer. I need to have a good life. I need to be functional, and functionality starts with conditioning, just does. Okay. You know, and also it's like a little bit of that mental discipline if you're a martial artist. If you're not, you can live your life however you want. But if you're going to say you're doing martial art in the martial art of functionality, the first thing you got to do is you got to do your conditioning. You got to take that time and do the conditioning and the discipline of it. Because, you know, sometimes it just sucks to wake up at 5:30 in the morning every morning. So do every morning I get up, first thing I do is I take 5 minutes a night, do my push-ups, and I stretch. That's it. That's my morning. Every morning I do some push-ups, and then I stretch, and I take a shower, then I go off to work. And then at 3:34, I do my conditioning. And then when I'm done at night, I get on the elliptical, and I do 10 minutes on the elliptical, and then I go take a shower and go home. That's every day. Not every night I'm elliptical, but almost every night I try to hit that elliptical or do something like that, right? Yeah. And that's my accountability, right? Now, I don't do the elliptical every single night, but I try to, right? We just got a sauna in the academy, so whoa. I'm super happy, right? So you're more than welcome.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's too hot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually, you can adjust the temperature. It's really good. But so the most martial art people lie to themselves and are LARPers.
Yeah.
Right? Particularly the combatives guys, which they're the biggest craziness. And then there's a whole bunch of martial art instructors that know better, but that – cater to that demographic. And what do? They cater to their like masculine LARPy fantasies.
Yeah.
So it's like this three move, you master this move, you'll be unbeatable.
Yeah.
Right. You know, like that kind of thing. This move, and you know, unbeatable. Like
we all played soldiers when we were kids and stuff like that. So now they want to play again.
They that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So that is one thing. Now the next thing I want to talk about, let me give you another, with like the bullshit things that martial art people say, or non-martial people, people outside of martial arts. So one of them that I've heard all the time, and this one came up soon, was, what do you think are some bullshit? You tell me, what do you think some bullshit things you heard that you think are bullshit?
Hmm.
I don't want to do all the talk.
Sure. bullshit things people say about martial arts or yeah, believe.
Or they believe before they do martial arts or as they're doing martial arts or something like that. Or the way people, they lie to themselves, right? Or just misconceptions. Anything you want.
Well, there's like the, like, take one lesson, be a badass kind of thing.
Yes. Yes. You are correct.
Yeah.
All I have to do is take this 1 hour Krav Maga level 1 certification, and now I'm a badass and I can teach. Holy shit. This is the one that drives me up the fucking wall. So I have people come in and tell me, I really want to learn how to fight. I really want to learn how to fight, but I can only train 1 hour a day, maybe once a month. I'm like, please put the crack pipe down. That is not possible. Now, could you defend yourself without training? Yes. You know how you do that? You are aware and you run away, right? Yeah. Your awareness. Like, defense is not like when the put the dukes up only. It's the best self-defense is avoid the situations. Don't the first one is don't get drunk. Don't hang around bad parts of the neighborhood. Watch your surroundings, you know, things like that. The second one is, I would recommend this, even myself, carry mace. You know, learn how to get it out and spray people when they're a threat and run away. Mm-hmm. Okay, those are legitimate things you can do. And, you know, I did, I was involved with the community group, and we were talking about anti-Asian violence and things like that. And basically, but also marginalized community violence wasn't just anti-Asian, but I said the best thing that is going on right now is in Little Italy. I'm sorry, in Chinatown. Excuse me. There was a politician. They got like $2,000-$3,000, $5,000 together, and they bought like 600 cans of like portable mace, and they gave it to all the old ladies, in Chinatown who were being targeted in the anti-Asian hate. Right, and I was like, "That's so smart. You're not going to teach a 60-year-old lady how to fight.
Yeah.
You're just not right." But you know what? If you don't actually put the time in, hand-to-hand combat skill is impossible unless you are like someone like your size, already gifted with being a huge. And even then, if you fight someone your own size or you fight someone with a knife, it's going to be really hard, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're not walking around at, you know, 6'3", 280.
6'4".
Or whatever, right? You know, I'm sorry, what?
6'4".
6'4". 6'4", I'm sorry.
Every inch counts.
I didn't mean you. I meant in someone.
Okay,
right?
6'4".
Yes,
out
6'4".
So we'll put it out
see,
there.
See what, when people say you're shorter than you actually are, you see how it hurts, Matt?
Yeah, it does.
Yes.
What are you, like 5'10"?
Thank you. No, I'm not 5'10". Thank you.
Your but personality always say, gives
when
you
always say,
inches.
Look down at you, yeah. It, you know, it, you reinforce
I look
it
up
over
to you while I'm looking down.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate you looking up to me, you know, metaphorically as you look down on me. Anyway, so no, but seriously, learning how to fight is impossible in 1 hour.
Sure.
It's not possible. You know, one of my friends is actually, he does a self-defense seminar in California. He's amazing, right? And you know what he does? He's like, I ain't teaching crap. I will not teach anything technical. I will only teach tactical. How to prevent it. Hey, things you can actually do. I, you know, make sure that when I'm in the parking lot and before I walk over to my car and be boxed in, I look around and make sure that nobody's following me, you know, like boxing me in. I do this. Oh, I make sure I park in areas that are light and I don't, you know, all these smart things that anybody can do. Yes, anybody can do that stuff. So that's fine. That's what a self-defense course should be.
Yeah.
Don't think like, oh, I do this thing and I'm just instantly day one ninja. And that is the problem. The other one, which is related, and even martial art instructors believe this, and this is not true. Some training is better than no training.
Yeah.
No, that's not fucking true.
Yeah.
That's absolutely not true. You know, little training makes me better fighter than no training. Are you kidding me? First of all, right? If I said just to defend yourself, you would use your natural in animal brain, your animal instincts, and you would have some kind of chance based on your genetic imprinting of how a primate defends himself. When you start actually learning martial art, the martial art stuff goes into the front of your brain, not the animal part of your brain. So you have to start training yourself to think through fighting, and it's very hard. And that's a journey that takes a lot of time. But when you're half and half, you're actually less effective very often than you were when you didn't do any training. Because you're sort of like, do I do this or do I do this? Do I do this or this? And it's not until one gets pretty good that you see the results of your actual training, right? So in the beginning, the first like 6 weeks of your martial art training, you're a worse fighter than you were when you started because your body's relearning something. So for example, what is something you're good at? What's something you're good at?
Oh my God, put me on the spot. I'm good at cooking.
Cooking, right. Okay. Yeah. So you usually cook, say, what kind of food?
American style.
American style, right, exactly. Something like that, right? Okay. What if I said, okay, you're only going to cook Indian food?
Ugh.
Yeah, the first time you cooked Indian food, it would be terrible, right? And then you get used to it, and then you'd be able to transfer what you knew from your other cooking into this new knowledge base, which is Indian, because it's called skill acquisition, right? Mm-hmm. The first time you do something, you're going to suck at it, even if you're kind of good over here. Mm-hmm. As you do something else, until you can transfer that and you find a way to transfer your knowledge over from this zone to here, you're actually going to suck. Because you're like, do I use this spice or this? Do I use this or this? Do I do that or this or that? Hey, is this thing I learned over here applicable? No, we don't use that spice this way. Use it this way. So some of your knowledge is not applicable, right? Same thing when you first start doing martial arts. You first start doing martial arts, you're like, do I do this thing or do I do that thing or do this? And your body doesn't really know what to do. It gets a little confused. And it has to like – skill acquisition always makes this a little dip lower before you go up. It's a little dip lower before you go up. Because you have to find how this jigsaw piece fits into what you already know, right? And that's hard. But the thing is, like a little training you don't even have the jigsaw piece. Like you kind of have a shitty jigsaw piece and you haven't experimented with it. Uh-huh. So the other thing is the biggest problem of a little training is, what do you think that is? Just guess.
Too much training. I thought we were going the opposite. Training the wrong thing.
That's true. That's true. That's a good point. I actually didn't think of that, but okay, let's say this. You go to one of these like instant ninja courses. Sure. You're like, Mick, you are now a level one certified.
Let's go, ninja warrior.
Kick ass ninja warrior, Krav Maga killer. How do you feel about yourself?
I feel pretty good.
That's right.
I'm gonna go find a fight.
After that, 1 hour. Exactly. After 1 hour, you feel pretty good.
Let's go to a bar in a bad neighborhood.
Now what's your actual skill?
Zero, negative.
What's your mental state?
100%.
That is very dangerous.
Yeah.
That is very, very fucking dangerous. So suddenly before you're like, well, you know, I don't really know how to fight and I'm going to take these precautions or I'm going to be smart. I'm going to do this. Now then you went to, holy shit, I'm a badass. Fuck all of you. Come on, bring it. Yeah. And you're not. And you know what? There's an example of, there was this woman and I don't want to shame her because I don't believe in that. You know, she was a victim. I know that's a very sad thing. But this is an attack that happened in Central Park. And this woman was a self-defense of combatives type style, self-defense instructor, a self-defense instructor, And she was on, first of all, she was on rollerblades. Okay, this is back when we had rollerblades, right? This is a while ago, right? Okay, so people like, not 1980s, but it was a while ago, right? So there are these like ruffians in the park, right? Not good dudes, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what a smart person do. You're rollerblading, you see these ruffians, and by her own account, she saw these people far away, right? She's like, okay, here's the rollerblading path. They're over there. She saw them completely, and she, by her own account, felt that they were threatening, right? If you were in that situation, Matt, what would you do?
Rollerblade the other way.
Exactly. You would go the other way. But she's like, fuck it. I'm a self-defense instructor.
I can handle this.
I can handle this, right? There was like four of them, and she's a 120-pound girl on rollerblades. Look, I'm a trained martial artist. I've been training all my life. I don't know what the fuck I could do on rollerblades. On rollerblades, dude, like this is terrible, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, outrun them, but then don't go into their zone.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she went right past them. They tackled her and then they, you know, attempted to rape her. Thank God some good Samaritan came over and helped her, and she was able to escape. Thank God. And you know what? I'm not going to say her name or her whatever happened. Like, I feel terrible that this happened. But all, and I'm not trying to victim shame either. The real horrible thing is that these people exist and they think it's okay to you know, violently attack women. That should be our first priority, is to get rid of these people. But the other thing is, you have to understand that the world itself is flawed, and you should go the other way. Dude, if I see those guys, I'm training years. I don't know if the guy's a knife. I don't know if he's a gun. Dude, I'm going the other way. Mm-hmm. Like, let's make some rational decision making. And you're on rollerblades, man. That is not a good place to be. And it's also was like late at night. Like, what are you doing rollerblading in Central Park fucking late at night? This is not a good decision. No. But because you're a self-defense instructor, level one combatants, blah, blah, blah.
Superiority.
Dude, yeah. And she had to be saved by a guy. Like, who dragged her out, and they both got really hurt, right? That is it's a very well-known story here in New York, and like, thank God she was okay, you know, like, and I don't want to, like, shame her, but, dude, some really fucking bad decision-making, you know, like, that's what little training does. It gives you a warped sense of reality that you think you're doing these knife guys, you think, oh, yeah, I'm going to survive a knife fight. Dude, are you fucking joking? Do you know what a knife fight really is like? It is bad. Dude, just get, like...
Yeah. I've seen West Side Story.
No, you know, like, that's a joke, right? You know, like, I know, but, like, West Side Story is exactly what a knife fight is not like. Yeah. You know, like...
Dancing.
It's bad. Yeah. Like, you're not going to see it coming. You're going to get shanked, and you're going to be in fucking traction at the best. You're going to be in traction for a few months if they puncture your lung or your kidney. If you puncture your kidney, you'll have kidney problems for the rest of your life, you know? This is bad and life-threatening. Mm. There's also, like, so I told you guys, the listeners, to check out the video by Andrew Wiltsy about, you know, street fighting. It's on his channel. Just look up, you know, Andrew Wiltsy and like, you know, actual fighting. And his point was, like, how, you know, some, even this is true, like, some Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys, they think they're just badasses. But it's very different being in an actual real-life altercation. But... And I want to give a shout out to a second video that I just saw, which was really, really well done. And it's by the guy I mentioned before, this guy from Armchair Violence. And he's just this nerdy little guy who is so fucking smart. He just delves right into the bullshit and just says, look, you're full of shit. And he talks about, like, how, like, knife fighting, the way it's approached, is just, you know, like, incredibly stupid. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's just based on bullshit. Because most of these knife fighters, you know, have never been in a knife altercation. Now, you know, we had Maya Soderholm on, Professor Maya, who's a knife and sword expert. And, you know, she consistently says, because she is not full of shit, she is completely wonderful instructor. She's like, I don't teach knife fighting. I don't teach combat with knives. I teach how to create movement and flow and understanding your body. And she has some other words, but I won't put words in her mouth, but she consistently says that I don't teach knife fighting. She's never been in a knife fight. Mm-hmm. And she's honest. She's like, I've never been in a fight to the death, right? Where someone's trying to murder me on the street and I had to stab. So I'm not going to teach that. I'm going to teach how to flow and understand the game of swordsmanship, right? And then from there, we can explore martial arts, mm-hmm. right? And because she's not full of shit. She is wonderful. She's an amazing, amazing person. And I don't want to put words in her mouth. I know she had said in our episode that she had a specific way of saying it, which I forgot. But I remember, oh, you teach knife fighting. She's like, no, I don't teach knife fighting. I remember that. And she said it to me a couple times since. I teach, you know, sword movement, sword work of the movement. Because she's never been in an actual life or death knife fight. She doesn't know what it is. So if you ain't never done it, how are you going to know what it's like, you know?
Sure.
And then what this guy in Armchair Violence does is he says he looks at all these medical reports and a huge amount of knife assaults and knife videos and shows, using statistics and facts and video, of why so much of so-called, you know, Kali and knife fighting, things like that, it's just based in fantasy land. And it's true. It's just based in fantasy land. So And I had a student recently, not recently, but a little while ago. He's like, oh, if you grapple me, I'm going to slash you here, 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 slash you here. So if you actually look at, I don't want to ruin the video because everybody should go see it. It's Armchair Violence, and it goes, why your knife fighting sucks. But do you think you're more likely to die from slashes or puncture wounds?
Puncture wounds.
Exactly. Exactly correct. So the person that came to my dojo, right? He's like, yeah, you can do this. And he slashed me like 10 times. Like, of course, it was just drilling, right? Mm-hmm. But he's like, you do this, I'll, you know, ginsu you, like, blah, 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 you know. Like, and I'm like, okay. In all that, like, 12 moves he did to me, there was not one puncture attack. It was just slashing. Now, I'm not saying slashing doesn't have a place. I don't know. Like, I'm not a knife fighting expert.
Death by a thousand cuts, right?
Yeah, it's possible. But you can see guys get shot with, you know, 7mm rounds or even worse. Like, there's a video of a guy in like a rock somewhere. He gets his arm blown off. And then he walks over, like, grabs the grenade that was in the arm that his arm had that was blown off with his other hand and throws it to the enemy. With his arm blown off, right? Wow. Something like that, right? I haven't seen it, but suppose it's like a famous video. But he's also, I've seen a huge amount of videos of people taking massive chest wounds from gunshots, and then coming on and fighting. And I have personally been involved in assaults where I've seen people slashed, right? When I was working as a bouncer, people slashed, and they just keep coming, right? You know, they're just absolutely, the slash does not stop the aggression right there. And that's like kind of the point of the guy's video. Is like, if you think you're going to win the fight by just slashing the guy, you're not. Knife fighting has to be, by its nature, puncture-based. And the reason why it's not, I think, probably is because, you know, a lot of these arts come out of like armored combat where you can't actually stab, so you're trying to slash at certain points. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes this battle of attrition of cardio, like we were talking about last sure. week. So, because you're wearing armor, I'm wearing more armor, and then suddenly one of us gets tired, and then, you know, I stomp on your face and put my sword through you. But a lot of the slashing is like this, not dueling, but this because we're wearing armor, obviously you can't puncture me through the armor. So it's this battle of who gets tired first. Mm-hmm. And also you can see that a lot of the old swords were pretty heavy. So you're getting hit with, it was almost like getting hit with a club, mm-hmm. right? But the, what we see in movies where the guy takes a sword and instantly decapitates you, it's like, doesn't really happen like that. Right. And so slashing is probably, and I'm not an expert at this, but slashing is probably a remnant of medieval style combat, or like you in Japanese swords, like you're slashing with a katana, but you're slashing in ways that would dismember your opponent because the blades, Japanese blades, were so incredibly sharp. And even then, you know, actual Japanese combat was not slashing. These are all dueling things. Like most kendo and kenjutsu come out of like dual stuff. Like what they did on the battlefield is totally different. They would shoot arrows at each other. Mm. They'd ride over each other with horses and then shoot arrows at each other. And then when they got guns, they shot each other. Right? That's like when Japanese actually went to war, they used mostly bow and arrows. And this is true. This is looking on like battlefields. It's like the 90% of death is by arrows. Wow. Right? You know, horsemanship. And then when they got guns, they used guns. Right? You know, like the dueling of the swords, right, the sword work, obviously it was some part of fighting, but that came mostly out of the one-on-one battles that would happen, like samurai versus samurai because of an honor incident or something like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So then slashing might come into play because you're dealing with guys in robes and the Japanese swords are curved, so they're harder to stab with. Straight on, they're much harder, so slashing, and they're very, very sharp. And the way you slash with a samurai sword is you start one area and you go all the way down, so it's like a slash cutting. But it's actually, that slashing is designed for when you're riding a horsemanship. So anyway, but it is what it is. So I'm not an expert in the subject in terms of like why there's slashing arts, because I had something I have to research much more. But the thing is, if you want to kill someone, you should puncture wound them, not slash them. That is much more likely. And the data from medical data on medical reports proves this. People go to the ER, don't die from slashes as much as, like, not even close to the amount of puncture wounds, right? Right. So if people have slashes and you go to the ER, they like say, hey, sit in the chair, hold this. We're gonna triage you and take this other guy here. If you have a puncture wound, you get put in the inside right away for surgery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so that's like one of the bullshit, right? So I recommend anybody take it out. Okay. Now, the last thing I want to talk about.
Okay.
Okay. Then we're done because I'm boring you, I'm sure. No. The last thing on a Porsche, so I want to talk about is bullshit that fighters say. Okay. Now, this is an interesting one and a fun one, uh-huh. right? Okay. So you're getting ready for a fight, Matt.
Sure.
3 weeks out. What are some of the things you do? Not training, like outside of training. What are some things you do to make sure you're going to do well in that fight?
Nutrition.
Yes. Excellent. Right. What else?
Sleep.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Very good. What else? What about sleep? What are you not doing instead of sleeping?
What am I not doing? I'm not masturbating.
Yes, exactly. What? Right. You're not masturbating and you're not having sex.
Oh, okay, cool.
Because.
I did it.
Because.
Oh, you got to build up the.
Build you. Yeah. Right, exactly.
Keep all that testosterone.
Exactly, right. That is so. That's what everybody says. And yeah. It is the absolute so full of shit.
You're never
shit.
More angry if you haven't had sex for a while?
I'm always angry. Oh, okay. No. So.
You got to get laid.
Sometimes that's true. No, okay. So that's interesting. But most fighters, and I had this discussion with one of my fighters recently. He's like, yeah, I don't have sex for like 3 weeks before. I'm like, dude, have sex, do your thing. So this comes from an old Chinese concept of the body, where the body is full of qi or ki or whatever you want to call it, right? Yeah. And every time you do something, you're depleting that. First of all, no fMRI or magnetic study has ever shown that qi or any of that stuff exists.
Midichlorians?
I'm sorry?
Midichlorians,
yes. Does not, the force does not exist.
They're not real? Okay.
Not real. No. Damn. Midichlorians do not exist. Unless you're Baby Yoda, I guess, right? I don't know. I don't see the ears and you're not like 3 feet tall. Mm. All right. So now, and there's so much misinformation about that. So first of all, my fighter said, but didn't Mike Tyson not have sex before he fought? Now, first of all, Mike Tyson is not a physician or has any understanding of the body. But the other thing is, it's very well known in fighting circles that Mike Tyson had tons and tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of sex before his fights. And that was even way too much sex.
Now, sometimes it was.
You know why
too.
Sex is bad? Sex is bad because you don't sleep or you exert yourself too much instead of resting. Huh. Sex is not bad in of itself, but if you're up all night when you should be getting 8 hours sleep, but then you get like 2 hours sleep.
Up all night? What kind of sex do you have?
Well, obviously I'm married, so not much, but back in the day, yeah, you know, no. I mean,
tantric 24 hour sex. I got you. Picking up what you're putting down.
You know, I've had things almost similar conversations with someone else, right? But, no, but a lot of times it's not just the act of sex, but yeah, like you cuddle or you this or that you talk to the girl on the phone, right? It's not just the sex.
Take them out
itself.
To dinner.
Right. I mean, it's all, or if you don't have a girlfriend, what do? You go to
buy
the club, you go to the chase, you go out.
Go to
the
chase?
Go on the chase.
Go to chase and get money.
No. Get on the chase, right? You go out to the club and
it's exhausting.
Yeah. And you go and pick up a girl or whatever, right? You know, like, and, like that takes time. Yeah. That takes time. It also takes away from your focus.
Sure.
It takes away. So it's not sex that hurts you. What it is you not focusing on your fight mm-hmm. and you're not getting enough sleep. That being said, what are some hormones that you need to grow muscle and to just be healthy and to get strong? What are some hormones? Mm-hmm. One of them is testosterone, right? Mm-hmm. Where does testosterone come from?
Your balls.
That's right. You also need human growth hormone.
Yeah.
Also, like stimulated from your gonads, right? I mean, it's created somewhere else, but you need to, your testicles need to work. Now, when you're actually having sex, you create more testosterone. You create more testosterone. You're more healthy. Your muscles repair more. You sleep better. So part of your training should be regular either self-love or or love with another person, right? Yeah. As long as you're getting your sleep. But that is the important part. Now, there's this bullshit book out there that says, well, to create human life and sperm cells, the amount of minerals that go into a human sperm cell are so large. The power needed to create that is so large that when you deplete your body, and I actually looked this up, this is so fucking full of shit, right? First of all, your body's creating sperm all the time. So this is, I'd like actually like to get a doctor on here all the time, but your body's always creating sperm. It doesn't stop, right? So, and then if you don't use it, it just kind of dissipates, right? So that's number one. But also, it doesn't take any more energy to create, like, you know what? It takes a lot more minerals probably to create a neuron, which is a much larger cell than a sperm. A neuron, which is this, like, you know, the myelin sheath and all these things, it has to connect here, and it's, you know, much more to create a neuron than it is to create a sperm cell, right? So I don't actually know what the body's necessary energy output is to create a sperm, but it's not any more than anything else, because it's one of the small, like, it just doesn't make sense, right? Mm-hmm. I actually need a physician on this, but to actually debunk it. But the idea that it's some specific special minerals go into the sperm cell is bullshit, because there's huge amounts of minerals and things needed to all function in your body. All your body needs the same nutrients and minerals, and you need to stimulate your body with proper human growth hormone to recover and get a good night's sleep, testosterone to create muscles and repair. And all those things come out of your endocrine system working properly and as it should. And part of that, to stimulate your endocrine system, one of them's a good way to stimulate it is to be active sexually. So anybody who says that having sex, the act of sex, is depleting your energy in some way is regurgitating, wow, like stupid shamanism.
Sure.
You know, but trainers saying don't have sex because they know, like Muhammad Ali was known to not have sex, but Muhammad Ali was also known to be a womanizer, and he would, like, you know, not be doing the things that he had to do, like sleeping. So his trainer would, like, dude, no sex, but not because of the sex thing. It was because the other stuff. They're like going out and getting drunk. Drinking, yeah. Cause like when you get it, if you're going to find, you know, on the hunt, on the chase or on the hunt,
yeah,
like you're going to go somewhere, you're going to go out to drink, you're going to stay out late, you're going to do this, you know, then suddenly, you know, you wake up the next morning and you're like, yeah, I'm kind of hungover and I haven't had some sleep. Well, that's not going to mean that day of training is just shit. So
have you seen MMA mixed with sex? Have you seen those videos?
I'm sorry, what?
It's two people, usually a man and a woman or same gender, and they're in outfits like normal, like wrestling, MMA, in a cage, and then halfway through it changes into sex.
I have not seen it, but I was approached.
You were approached?
No, I was approached by this guy a long time ago, and he ran they didn't have sex in the venue, but they did mixed gendered wrestling, and it was not like actual wrestling. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't actual competitive stuff. So, and then I think that would go off and become something else outside of the venue, right? Because mm-hmm. in New York, there'd be like prostitution or something. Sure. I don't really know, right? But, I was approached by him. And he was this very, very large scene that he's part of, that was told that's very big in New York. That being said, I'm not part of it. I've never interacted with that scene and I don't know anything about it. Whatever floats your boat, I'm not judging.
Sure.
That being said, I have a problem with, so I'll give you an example. You sometimes drink alcohol, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you drink alcohol here during work hours?
Yeah. No, I shouldn't, but
you
do.
Don't.
See, I don't. I never.
Right. You don't. You should not, right? And you shouldn't. Why shouldn't you?
It's not appropriate. It's not appropriate.
Right. Okay. I was going to say, you're going to go to church. Let's say not here. Go to church at a funeral. And right in the sermon, you crack open a 40 and start chugging your 40.
An Irish funeral maybe, but everybody else, probably not.
I don't know. No, it's not appropriate, yes, right? You know, there's certain things that are fine somewhere else, mm-hmm, and they're not appropriate in other, like, okay.
Social contracts.
Yeah, right. It's just understood that there are times where this is okay over here and this is not okay here. Like, we were talking about, what were we talking about before? like there's different values, like, you know, and some people feel that there's a big thing about drag shows that children shouldn't be exposed to drag shows, which whatever, I don't agree with that, but I could understand their perspective that this is okay over there, although I think actually they don't think it's okay anywhere, but maybe this is not the best venue over here. I don't agree with it, but I can understand that concept of like maybe they're not ready for this or something like that. I disagree, but I understand the overall concept. It's like in my academy, I have people come in and I tell them to take off their hat and we're not going to curse, right? You know, outside, do whatever. But there's a certain type of behavior here that I expect. You know, like when you're talking to your teacher in college, I'm fucking, like, you don't talk like that to your teacher. You don't talk to your priest, your imam, your, you know, roshi or whatever, right? You don't talk to them like that. There's a type of decorum and appropriateness of certain behavior, certain places. Martial arts, to me, is martial arts. That's a box. And this box of martial arts is internal challenge and self-development. And the box of sexuality is another box. And I think they're both good boxes. But putting them together destroys both, right? It's like you don't get the martial arts. And my opinion of how I feel about other people is, you know what, honestly, I'm not making judgment, but I'm not like putting anyone in submission and then having sex with them.
Yeah, it's pretty good grappling in his videos though.
I don't know. You know, like, I don't know. Like, I know it's like a scene. It's not for me, right? Not for me. I think it's inappropriate. Also, I teach a lot of people who've been victims of sexual assault. So anytime that kind of not even going to sex, but anytime a barrier of kind of like overt meatheady masculinity comes, I'm like, dude, this is not appropriate, because I want my venue to be a place where a person of any gender can come and feel like they are going to be taught in a way that is respectful of their trauma and also taught properly and focused, and nobody's going to be thinking about anything else other than fighting. And of course, in grappling, there's a lot of like personal contact, and it can be weird if one person is a douchebag or like not thinking about martial arts. So I was training with this girl, right? I was training with this girl, and you know, girl is extraordinary. This is before I got married, right? Extraordinarily attractive girl. You know what? How many times I thought she was attractive in the role? Not zero. Like, it wasn't even occurred to me. This is not a girl. It's just a person. And then, like, we stopped rolling and, you know, you get changed, you go out and leave the academy. This was in California. And get it. I'm like, oh, wow. I didn't even realize. I'm like, wow, this girl's actually very attractive, right? You know, like, of course, she's still a training partner, so I didn't go there. But, like, it was suddenly, like, I actually spent, like, 2 hours training with her. But I couldn't even tell you what the color of her hair was. You know, like I'm not thinking about that, right? And then, like, you know, she gets changed, I get changed, we're just hanging out, and I'm like, wow, you know, very conventionally attractive woman, you know, like, wow, I didn't notice. But it was weird to me that I didn't notice it for the 2 hours I was training with her. Like, and that's the way it should be. To me, that's what it should be. Training is training. Everything else is everything else. The same thing is, I had a student come to the academy and they're baked out on marijuana. I am all for marijuana legalization. I do not think, unlike the Eddie Bravo people, I do not think that you should be baked out when you're doing jiu-jitsu. I do not think you should do that, right? That's appropriate some other part of your time, right?
Sure.
Although it's not for me. But, or the worst one is drunk. When people are drunk, they just can't make good decisions, right? Yeah. Marijuana is like not good, but at least it's not dangerous. When people come to the academy drunk, right, or hungover the next day, it's actually dangerous, right? Very dangerous. Yeah. So it's not appropriate, right? You know, there's a lot of behavior in jiu-jitsu and MMA academies is extraordinarily inappropriate, which is why we've had like some serious problems, like Cyborg, his association in California, not Chris Cyborg, the female, but Cyborg is a male. Another guy named Cyborg. There's a lot of cyborgs out there. But his associate got in trouble because there was a lot of incidents in his association, not involved with him personally, as I understand, but in his association that were extraordinarily inappropriate and involved women who were not were under 18. This is like crime. This is a fucking crime. And it's just terrible. Like, it's fucking terrible. So there's gotta be a line of professionalism, particularly in the in arts where people are grappling. And like, I don't ever involve myself in crossing any of those lines of appropriateness, including, like, I mean, obviously I'm married now, but including as an instructor before I got married, seeing my students as anything other than students, right? Mm-hmm. I know it's not appropriate for me,
yeah.
You know? And it's like any teacher, like, you know, you're teaching someone, you shouldn't be dating them, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That being said, you know, there's always like the guy meets his future wife as a teacher and things happen. But, you know, there's a difference between that one time and then like 20 times. And I'll be honest, every fucking Brazilian jiu-jitsu instructor that I've ever met, not everyone, that's not true, but a lot have moments of inappropriateness. You know, mm-hmm. Actually, I want to say the one person I'm going to shout out to him, and he's going through a very tough time right now, is Marcelo Garcia. Marcelo Garcia is fighting cancer right now. And my power to him, Marcelo Garcia was, in this sense, the best Brazilian instructor I've ever met in terms of how appropriate he always was on the mat with all the students and how professional and how absolutely friendly. And there was nothing but training. And many other jiu-jitsu instructors I've had and met did not live up to that standard that Marcelo would set, right? I mean, he was perfect. He was, there was nothing but training. There's nothing but training. They would never, never, ever, ever cross any lines of professionality. Ever. Ever. He was perfect. And then there's other instructors that like have sex with 20 students at a time, you know, like, yeah, you know, like just crazy. It's just nuts. Like every female student that walk in, there's a word, Maria no tatami, or tatami de Maria, the tatami meaning the mats, the Maria, the woman. So like girls come in to train and then like they just like, oh, they're there for the senior students to go date. Uh-huh. That's fucking terrible. It's like Mad Men all over again. The secretary pool is now there for the advertising agents to hit on and date. And yeah. Like, this sucks, man. It's an extension of toxic masculinity and gross male privilege. And it's just fucking gross, right? It's gross.
Yeah.
So, but you can move over those lines of appropriateness very quickly if you're not cautious and you're not setting professional boundaries and it's boundaries of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are other boundaries too, right? And, this is boundaries of diction. And I think it becomes like a very tough thing is like, we're at a point in our society where we haven't agreed on what our values are. Right. So I grew up in 1980s and like, that's fucking retarded. Now you can't say that anymore. That's like a word that people don't say anymore.
Yeah.
But it was a word in the 80s that everybody would say all the time. And my wife gets me. She says, you can't say that anymore. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's not a good word to say anymore. It's like the N-word now, you know? And maybe not that bad, I don't think. But it's bad, right? It's bad, right?
Sure.
You know, like, but people in my generation, a lot of them are like, you fucking snowflakes. Like, why can't I just say what I want to say?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? We have not agreed on, like, widely understood values of like, this is appropriate dialogue and this is not. And we're at a flux point, you know? So sometimes the lines of professionals, how you talk about pronouns and things like that. Like, you know, like person says, I prefer they. You're like, there's some conservative jiu-jitsu instructors like, fuck that, man. You know, like, you know, but then myself, I'm like, hey dude, I'm just going to be respectful.
Yeah.
And I don't know. We're in this time where we as a society have not agreed on a standardized rule of social grace, where I would say 50 years ago, while it was very repressive, there was a consistent and understood line of what was acceptable and what was not. And some of that stuff that was acceptable was very, very, very bad. So we're kind of like pushing back. Like, mm-hmm. Yes, you can't be a Harvey Weinstein and hit on your, be a sexual predator, but in 1960s, that was just okay.
That was fine. Okay,
yeah. Right. That was fine. You know, like, you can't say certain things that were totally fine in my day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there were certain ways to call men weak, which would usually involve female genitalia or referring them to them in negative ways, the negative words for LGBTQ people. That was like, oh, like you're not tough, yeah. Right? You know what I'm saying, right? Yeah, the words, yeah. So that was like, yeah, right. You know, something like that, right? Worse, right? But like, that's not appropriate anymore. But in a wrestling room in 1982, you know, those words were flying and nobody would be disciplined for that.
Yeah.
Now, what's proper diction right now? I don't even know. Like, I don't know, but
it
changes
with every room you walk in.
Right. But I know for me personally that I will respect everybody's background who comes into my door, and I'll ask, if I'm not sure, I'll ask how they would like to be talked to. And I will not use terms of derision that are based on, what's the word I'm looking for? Based on, like the patriarchy or misogyny. Like, I'm not going to call someone like a word for female genitalia if they're wimpy or something, you know? Right. That being said, I will call them out on their stuff. I will call them out, right? Like, come on, you gotta go. Right. But there are ways to do it. There's, you know, like there are lines of appropriateness that we have not quite decided. And I'm navigating that myself too. You know, mm-hmm. I have to catch myself too. You know, like, oh, this word is like not acceptable anymore to the young generation. Yeah. Especially like I'm teaching kids who are, you know, 30 years younger than me or more. Right. So we sometimes have like different ways of looking at the world, you know?
It's hard to navigate.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so today was the bullshit concepts that surround the martial arts. So yeah. Before we had the lies that martial art people say, and now this one was the lies that martial art people outside of martial arts or inside martial arts say, the misconceptions.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so.
Very fun.
Yeah, sex during training is okay. Okay, within proper boundaries.
Sure.
A little bit of training is better than none is totally not true. And most actually people want to LARP rather than actual train. And because training starts with conditioning. And if you're not doing that, you're lying to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to go
Which
pretend.
Which is actually probably the most common is like, you know, people who do martial arts but actually in pretty bad shape.
I'm going to go LARP about somebody that recently had sex that has had one lesson in martial arts.
While eating McDonald's burger.
While eating Arby's.
I'm gonna Arby's, go find Arby's, out. Yes. and saying inappropriate diction.
Ah, yeah.
Not using proper pronouns.
Yep. I'm going to get all crazy on it. Get my bandana, my Oakley sunglasses. Let's go.
Your bandana and Oakley sunglasses.
That was fun.
That was fun, yes. Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter at @Marshall_culture and on Instagram at @MarshallCultureCast. Please leave a review on iTunes, and we'll see you next time on the Marshall Culture Podcast.